Chapter 13, Battery Park. Friday, October 8th, 7 a.m. I was on my way from Grand Central Station to Bowling Green on a number 5 train. This subway station is just north of Battery Park, which was where I was going to meet Lorraine Houston. Battery Park is a public area where it would be easier for the NYPD team to watch and wait. I thought that Houston would feel uncomfortable away from the deep carpets and expensive furniture of her offices. From the subway station, it was just a few minutes' walk to Battery Park. I walked across to the Sphere, a famous piece of public art at the north end of the park. A large gold metal ball, as tall as a house. Oldenburg's team was already waiting there with hidden cameras, though you wouldn't know they were police officers. Two young guys talking on a seat, a couple standing under an umbrella. Their orders were to watch and wait. But if I waved my hat, they would immediately help me. The sky was full of black clouds, and it was starting to rain. I put up my umbrella and looked at my watch. It was 8 o'clock. Time to call Houston. "Ms. Houston, I'm waiting for you," I said. "Bring the money and come along. If there's any trouble, my personal assistant has a copy of your accounts ready to email to every newspaper in New York. If all goes to plan, she'll destroy that copy."
"Okay, that's understood," she replied. "How do I know you're telling the truth?"
"Ask yourself this question. What will happen if you don't believe me? I'll need your cell phone number." "Thanks. Now, leave the building and wait outside the front entrance."
I let her wait a few minutes in the cold. I wanted her to feel angry and impatient by the time she arrived at Battery Park. Now for my next call.
"So sorry to keep you waiting," I lied. "You see a tall white-haired guy in a dark green overcoat carrying a copy of the Wall Street Journal? He should be opposite you, standing by a cab."
Houston said she could see him.
"That's my assistant, Mr. Blaney. Go and talk with him," I continued. "He has a cab waiting for you."
We had to make sure that Houston arrived alone. Joe Blaney's job was to make sure that she took our cab, a cab with an NYPD driver. Houston was going to be taken on a little tour of Lower Manhattan. We were going to take our time and make sure she was in a very bad mood by the time she met me. 30 minutes later, I called Houston again.
"Tell the driver to drop you at the north entrance to Battery Park, opposite Bowling Green. Then walk south to the Sphere. You'll see me holding a blue and white golf umbrella. By the way, you don't need to pay the driver. Hope you enjoyed your sightseeing."
I wouldn't like to repeat Houston's reply. Such bad language. The rain was beginning to fall more heavily as I saw her. She was tall and slim and was wearing a red suit with a short skirt that showed a lot of leg. She really wasn't dressed for the weather. I turned on my little secret recorder. I waved to her and sat on a park seat under the trees opposite the Sphere.
"This had better be good, Marley," she said. "Do you have my papers?"
"Not so fast," I replied. "Do you have my money?"
She put her case on her knees and opened it. Inside, it was packed with $100 bills.
"Count it, if you like," she said.
"Don't you think the park looks lovely in fall?" I asked.
"I don't have all day. Hurry up and give me the papers," she said impatiently.
I slowly reached into my case and took out an envelope,
which I gave to her. Then I reached into my coat pocket for my cell phone. Houston took a single piece of paper out of the envelope and looked at me like a dog which was about to bite.
Give me the rest of the accounts, Marley, or you're dead meat.
She had taken a small gun out of her purse and was pressing it into my side. Not very intelligent, Ms. Houston, I said. Remember, if anything happens to me, my personal assistant will email your accounts to every newspaper in this city. If I press send, my personal assistant gets that message. Also, shooting people in public isn't a good idea. You'll get the rest of the papers. Just be patient. Like any good businessman, I like to count my money first. She gave me a cold, hard look through narrow eyes, then put the gun back in her purse. Now she was beginning to shake with the cold. Here, take my overcoat, I said. She took the coat and put it over her shoulders. She smiled for the first time and thanked me. Now I felt I might have the advantage. I quickly checked the money, then took a second envelope from my case and held it in front of her. There must be some very important information here. You're one smart businesswoman, Ms. Houston, and a good employer. I like the way you find answers to problems with your people. Like sending Steinman on his final drive in O'Neill's car. Good work. The police think that O'Neill is the killer. That way, you can be completely sure it's the end of your trouble with those two. As soon as I tell the police where O'Neill is, you're safe. She smiled again.
You're a smart guy. I'm sorry about Steinman. He was good at his job, until he started to think he was smarter than me. I couldn't let him tell me what to do. I had to get rid of him.
At last I had it, and everything was on the recorder. I passed her the second envelope. She opened it quickly, took out the papers, and counted them.
Looks like it's all here. It's been good doing business with you, she said, and returned my overcoat. Now just make sure the police get a hold of O'Neill.
As she walked away, I called to her. Actually, Ms. Houston, I got a message from O'Neill. He'd like to tell you, smile, you're on a police camera. I waved my hat in the air. Houston screamed and pulled out her gun, but in seconds the NYPD team was all around her. She dropped the gun and fell to the ground. A minute ago, she had been the president of Ocean Star Finance and a very rich woman. Now she was going to spend many years in jail. I called Oldenburg to tell him the news.
Good work, Marley, he said. O'Neill will soon be a free man.
The rain had stopped, and the sun had begun to break through the heavy clouds. In the sunshine, leaves were dropping from the trees and turning in the wind. The air from the ocean smelled fresh and clean. It felt good to be alive. I should spend more time in this city's parks.
Here's the beginning of another book at this level. Strong Medicine by Richard McAndrew.
Chapter 1. A Death in Santa Cruz. Mark Latto stopped and looked up at the white-painted wooden house on Westcliff Drive. There are many houses like this along the coast of California. Many houses like this in Santa Cruz. But this one was different. There was a police car parked on the road outside. A police car outside a house doesn't always mean there's trouble inside, but Lato felt the hairs on the back of his neck stand up. Something wasn't right. He walked towards the front door. As he did so, it was opened by a mountain of a man, at least 2 meters tall, almost as wide as the door, and wearing the dark blue of the Santa Cruz police.
Yes?
Asked the police officer in a slow American voice.
I'm here to see Deborah Spencer, began Lato. She's expecting me. And who are you?
My name's Mark Lato. I'm a doctor. I've come over from Britain to see her.
Well, you'd better come in, Dr. Lato, said the police officer, stepping back from the door to let Lato in. I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you. Miss Spencer was found dead early this morning.
Oh, no. Lato put a hand up to his mouth. How terrible.
Yes, continued the police officer. So I'm afraid you won't get to see her. However, a detective will be along here in a few minutes, and he may want to have a talk with you.
Detective? Asked Lato. Are you saying...
I'm not saying anything, Dr. Lato, said the police officer, looking Lato straight in the eye. I'm just asking you to take a seat in that room. He nodded at an open door on the right. Someone will be with you shortly.
Lato found himself in a light, airy sitting room with a large window looking out over the sea. He put his sunglasses down on a small coffee table and looked out of the window. It was a lovely, sunny March day. Westcliff Drive was busy with joggers and people walking their dogs. Further out, he could see Santa Cruz Wharf beginning to open up for the day. A van was taking food and drink to one of the restaurants at the end of the wharf. A few men and women were fishing from the side. And although it was early in the year, there were one or two tourists walking along the wharf, looking into the shop windows. Lato was tall, with dark brown hair and blue eyes. He was wearing a light-coloured jacket and trousers and a light blue shirt. He turned and looked at himself in the mirror on the wall. Although he was in his early 30s, he looked older. It was probably tiredness, he thought. It was 10 in the morning here in California, but his body was still on British time. He sat in a yellow armchair near the window and closed his eyes. Time passed.
Dr. Lato? Said a voice.
Lato woke suddenly to see a short, grey-haired man in his late 50s standing in front of him.
I'm Tony Martinez, a detective with the Santa Cruz Police, said the man, taking some paper from the inside pocket of his old brown jacket.
He found a pen in a side pocket.
Hello, Detective Martinez, said Lato, starting to push himself up out of the chair.
Martinez stopped him by holding out a hand.
Don't get up, he said. I've just got a few questions for you.
Lato sat uncomfortably on the front of the chair. Martinez took a seat on the sofa opposite. His grey trousers looked old, so did his shoes.
Officer Seymour tells me you're British, said Martinez.
That's right, replied Lato.
So, how is it that you know Miss Spencer?
Lato thought for a moment before answering.
I'm a doctor of Western medicine, and she was a doctor of Chinese or Asian medicine. She had some ideas that I was very interested in. We emailed each other about them, and then I came out here to learn more, and so that she could teach me how to use these ideas on my patients.
So, how well did you know her? Asked Martinez.
Well, I met her once a couple of years ago, replied Lato. She was in London on holiday. We had dinner one evening. That's the only time we actually met. The rest of the time we just emailed each other.
And can you tell me what Miss Spencer was doing that interested you?
Lato looked out of the window, deciding how to explain things to Martinez.
You know what Parkinson's disease is? Asked Lato.
Sure, it's an illness that old people get. They shake a lot.
Lato smiled.
Actually, it's not just old people who get it. Some young people get it too.
Oh, okay,
said Martinez. But you're right about the shaking, continued Lato. Sometimes the hands and arms shake, sometimes the legs, sometimes both. It can do other things to the body, too. Some people who have Parkinson's find it difficult to move parts of their body. Sometimes they can only move very slowly. Sometimes they find it difficult to move parts of their face. They can't smile. A lot of different things can happen to the body. Martinez was watching Lato and listening carefully.
And what can you doctors do about it? He asked.
Well, Western doctors can't do much, really, replied Lato. But Deborah was trying a new way of helping people who have this disease.
I see.
Martinez wrote something on the paper and then looked across at Lato again.
When did you arrive in the States? Martinez asked.
Yesterday afternoon, replied Lato. I got into San Francisco at about 2 o'clock and drove straight down here. Arrived about 4:30, 5 o'clock.
How long are you staying? Asked Martinez.
Well, I was planning to stay for a couple of weeks. Now, I don't know. Martinez stood up.
Well, you can't leave town just yet, he said. Anyway, thanks, Doc. That's it. You're free to go. On your way out, tell Officer Seymour where you're staying. Oh, and ask me if you do want to leave town.
He took a card from the top pocket of his jacket and gave it to Lato. Lato stood up too.
Can I ask you a question? He asked.
Martinez nodded.
How did she die?
We don't know yet, said Martinez. We'll have to wait for the police scientists to have a look at her body.
But why are you here? I mean, you're a detective, aren't you? Asked Lato.
I'm just checking to make sure everything's okay, said Martinez. I mean, nobody's broken into the house. Nobody's been fighting in the house. She doesn't seem to have taken her own life.
Martinez put the paper away in his pocket.
It looks as if she just died. I'm sorry, but sometimes it happens. Well, you must know that. You're a doctor.
Lato thought about saying something, but decided not to. As a doctor, he knew that sometimes people did just die. A sudden heart problem or something like that. It happened, but it was unusual. And it was very unusual if the person was a healthy, B-42-year-old man in a caring profession and everything to live for, with everything to live for. For the same time, they felt the hair on the back. He felt the hairs on the back of his neck stand up.